talk about, that's a starting place, and then you need to define that probably to make sure of what that means. I just wouldn't be comfortable about it. I think that you're going in the right direction, and I think that's probably, we can work something out, but I'm not sure we can still sit here and do it right now.
No, I would prefer we go back and talk about it, you know, and figure it out. Just, I think it's an easily solved problem.
Yeah, whoever's out there could listen to what Senator Brennan said, that would be probably the best direction to go, I think, too. But
is Nan still here?
I'm not here.
Nan, can you come up? Nancy, can you come up for a minute?
I had one other question. Why did the bill? This was a question that was raised to me by Senator Thorne. On page 3 of the Hannon Gross version, line 8 and 9 of the up in the top.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we delete "or from dehorning and vaccinating cattle for the person, agent, or employee"?
The veterinary board was trying to be general and state that these people who work with the ranchers may do other things than just dehorning or vaccinate. We thought if you just specify dehorn and vaccinate, that is more of a limitation. So in our original draft, we took that out to make it a bit more general. I mean, they might do dehorning, vaccination, ear clipping, you know, to put the tags in or something like that. And we figured that with putting dehorning and vaccinating, that would show it's more of a limited type of service.
Makes sense.
Well, but it doesn't really relate to the animals still, does it?
Well, that's another issue we'll have to talk about, because there was a concern that I'm not sure the old language was actually... The exemption was, I think it's pretty clear that the old language wasn't just limited to dehorning and vaccinating, I think. But let's talk about that. We'll work about it. Well, I just want to sort of alert you that that was an issue. Okay?
We'll take our experts here and go outside and try to work up something.
Okay. Well, we don't have to solve it today. Okay.
But I won't be able to get all these great veterinarians here again. Wow. Thank you.
Okay, just on that dehorning, it just, if you eliminate those words, the concern you create is that you're saying that they can't do that. So it gets, I mean, even if you may be, in fact, trying to make it more general, you got to be real clear that's what you're doing. Okay. So let me close the work session on 180 and open the public hearing on HJR 41. Okay. Let me find my sheet here.
I don't.
That was just for this little.
Okay, let me call a panel that want to testify on HGR 41. Stephen Donnell, John Platt, Andy Kerr, Nancy Peterson, and Liz Frankel. Well, that's just a city.
Thank you very much. Let me introduce these people to you. To my right, to your left, is John Platt, who today is representing the Wet'suwet'en Indians. Next to him is Nancy Peterson, representing Portland Audubon Society. To my right is Steve Donnell, who is representing Oregon Wildlife Federation. I'm Liz Frankel, representing the Oregon Chapter of the Sierra Club, and to my left is Andy Kerr of Oregon Natural Resources Council. I think I'd like to start, if I may. The Sierra Club has been involved in federal land use planning since it was founded in 1892. The management of public lands has been named a priority interest to its members as the club has grown to 400,000 members nationally and 6,500 members in the state of Oregon. Our members in Oregon regularly comment on federal lands issues ranging from public land grazing policy and mineral leasing programs to the current Decadal National Forest planning process. The first reading of H.R. 41 in the House was just a week ago, Wednesday. The only public hearing was a specially scheduled hearing Tuesday at 5:15, to which you were invited. The resolution was heard in the House yesterday as a special order of business. No one in the Sierra Club, nor any other conservation organization that we are aware of, was contacted regarding H.R. 41 during its preparation. The public hearing schedules for both the House committee and your committee appeared on the same day, just a week before the resolution went to the floor of the House. Testimony was presented by us before the House Agriculture, Forestry, and Natural Resources Committee. Committee Chair Agron stated that he was not interested in amendments because he was interested in expediting the movement of H.R. 41, and amendments would cause a delay of several days. It is thus that we are pleased to have an opportunity to explore with you our very real concerns with H.R. 41. It is the position of the Sierra Club that this entire resolution is unnecessary. By executive order, the governor can coordinate response to federal land use planning now and does. A year ago, in public testimony before the Trade and Economic Committee, the Department of Forestry noted it had been assigned as lead agency and was reviewing all national forest plans, coordinating agency response, and that there were three full-time staff to do so. We do not believe that this resolution is necessary and that parts of the resolution are delving into forest policy, which go way beyond any policy which you have discussed. It is the committee, if the committee, however, feels obligated to pass a resolution as part of the governor's 60-day agenda, we recommend the deletion of Section 3 and Section 4 of the resolution, in addition to the changes noted in the next section. The resolution would then support a new policy giving the governor the role of coordinating and advocating a state position. Some specific comments and recommendations. In line 8 of the resolution, reference is made to federal law requiring the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management to coordinate their plans with state and local plans. The language in the resolution itself uses the verb consistent, see lines 22 and 29. As all of you who have dealt with Oregon land use laws should be know, there is a difference. Consistency is a requirement in the Coast Zone and federal state management. For the purposes of this resolution, however, we suggest that the legally required coordinate be substituted for consistent in lines 22 and 29. If the intent of the resolution is to broaden the authority of the governor in federal land planning, we suggest, in the interest of ensuring accountability, the phrase, representing the people of Oregon, be added on the lines 21 and 24 after the governor of the state of Oregon, representing the people of Oregon. Lines 10 through 12 state that federal lands supply many of the commodities critical to the economy of this state, including timber, grazing and minerals, and to the environment of this state, including fish, wildlife, water, and recreation. We suggest you add tourism and fish to the commodity list. Nothing in the preamble or in the four-part resolution refers to national park or national wildlife refuge planning as making up federal lands in this state. Sections 1 and 2 of the resolution do not limit federal lands. Since Oregon has both a national park and national wildlife refuges, it would be appropriate to add them to the federal ownership list in the first paragraph of the preamble. Also, if the governor is to coordinate the state response to national planning, the process should be the same for all federal lands, not just the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. We would, as mentioned above, recommend the deletion of Sections 3 and 4. Sections 3 and 4 refer only to U.S. Forest Service and BLM and appear to be primarily concerned with the present Decadal National Forest planning process. A resolution on the state policy regarding the current national forest plans could be studied as a separate resolution for consideration, but branching out into a new and specific resource policy with this review is inappropriate. The state has not reviewed constraints to determine whether they are in the interests of Oregon or not. The technicality of what would constitute the full range of possible management alternatives as proposed in Section 4 has not been reviewed or discussed by this committee. Some public lands had either no plans or old plans, and no cumulative impact analysis has been prepared to determine whether, in fact, there are even viable options. Can this committee confidently say what the governor should or should not do as required by Section 4? Such specific forest policy should not be part of this resolution. The cumulative analysis, which is required by Section 3, is to be prepared by the Executive Department with the assistance of the forest faculty from OSU, according to Gail Ackerman's testimony on Tuesday. While the forest faculty at OSU is outstanding, their review would not necessarily represent those other commodities mentioned in the preamble, certainly would not represent fish as a commodity. Agencies develop administrative rules, giving the public a yardstick for the fairness and legality of agency decisions. This section without further definition is dangerously vague and potentially one-sided. If the state of Oregon wished to pass a multiple use act to help clarify natural resource policy, we would be delighted to help, but not as an amendment to a resolution. One final note about the governor's responsibilities in Section 1 and 2. Gail Ackerman has indicated that the governor is proposing to develop a process for public involvement. We agree that such a process is necessary. Individual agency responses and advocacy are mandated for them by law and by their boards or commissions. By combining agency responses and blending them into one response, a new and different response has been created, which does not necessarily represent any one agency. That new response will likely require balancing and trade-offs between fish and timber, for example. That new response must be subject to public review. Further, we believe that not just agency data, but an agency's position must be available to both the public and to the federal agency which is requesting response. The governor's response for the people of Oregon will likely be different. The federal agency and the public, however, should have the benefit of those agency findings in making their own determinations. Thank you very much for this opportunity to comment on these issues, which are so important to our members.
Liz, let me make sure I understand. The whole issue of coordinate and consistent. It mentions consistency. Well, what's the problem with saying that the plans need to be consistent in your mind?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that there's any way, there's no requirement in federal law such as there is in the Coastal Zone Management Law that requires federal consistency. So you would be making new law for the feds and probably couldn't.
Well, we understand we can't do that. I mean, nobody has any illusion that we do that. I mean, let's be real.
Well, then why not use the word coordinate?
Well, why not have a goal that their plans be consistent with our plans?
The reason why not is that, like anything else, I think reality on paper as well as in action perhaps ought to be reality. And that is, yes, you can coordinate, but consistency isn't a tenable goal in this case. I mean, after all, the federal lands belong to the feds. We're part of that system, of course. And they must take our views into consideration. And they must cooperate and coordinate with us. But that's not the same as the plans being consistent.
Well, okay. I mean, I think basically, A, it's a resolution, but B, it's looking at line 21-22, it's saying the governor of the state of Oregon is directed to participate actively at all stages of the federal land use planning process to assure that the federal plans are consistent. He doesn't control the feds.
That's correct.
We understand that. So what's his goal?
His goal, the primary goal in this is that you're giving him direction to the fullest extent possible. He's supposed to participate in the process. And two, that he's supposed to coordinate and come up with a single position. both of which are perfectly realistic goals.
But what's his goal? What are we asking him to have as his goal when he deals with the feds?
Obviously, what he thinks is best for the state of Oregon. That's what's going to come out, presumably, out of the package of what the agencies want, and he's reviewing that.
Yeah, I just don't. Okay. Further questions?
The next person that would like to speak to you is Steve Donnell from Oregon Wildlife Federation.
My name is Stephen Donnell. I'm representing the Oregon Wildlife Federation. And in driving over here this morning from La Grande, I tried to put into order how I'd make my testimony. And with the chairman's permission, for the sake of time, I'd like to have the written comments put in the record, and I won't read them, but I would read the last paragraph. And then I'll go into my oral comments. House Joint Resolution 41, if passed, will send a message to the federal government that Oregon, as state policy, is in some respects not willing to follow federal statutory requirements. We urge that the committee table this resolution or any alternative, amend it as we will discuss in our oral testimony. In preparing for this testimony, I went back through the handbook put out by the Agriculture Department titled The Principal Laws Relating to Forest Service Activities. In reviewing that, I found there were 11 specific federal laws which would impact House Joint Resolution 41. And basically what I found was that some of the things that are being stated in the resolution that the governor is supposed to do are in conflict with federal statutes. And I made some annotations and quotations from these statutes, and with the committee's permission, I will go down through some of them. The National Forest Management Act talks about selling commodities, and we're talking about selling the commodities for jobs. And it said specifically that the selling of commodities must be compatible with multi-use resource management objectives in the affected area. Now, the affected area in this case would be the forest involved, such as Willow, Whitman, and Eastern Oregon, the Umatilla National Forest. The Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act states that it allows for joint comprehensive plans with states for conservation and rehabilitation, consistent with overall land use and management plans for the land involved. And in this case, they're talking about the management plan by the federal government. And this allows then for joint plans to be developed between the state and the federal government. And so that would be implicit in, if you have a House Joint Resolution 41 passed as it's presently written, the state and the federal government are going to have to come up with a plan. The Bankhead-Jones Act, which is the Farm Tenant Act, requires development programs for land conservation and land utilization, and then such cooperation with federal, state, and territory and other public agencies. So again, we have a joint situation, not a unilateral one, which is implied by this resolution. The Comprehensive Cooperative Forest Management Act, as amended, allows the federal government, in cooperation with states, to provide technical service to private landowners, which would be a goal and objective underneath this resolution, as I understand. But again, it's a cooperative situation. The Agriculture Act says that they shall assist the states in undertaking needed programs of tree planting, which is part of the forest planting situation, particularly in the regeneration of the timbered lands, because depending upon the effectiveness of the regeneration, the allowable cut or the sustained yield basis will be determined. The Multi-Use Sustained Yield Act has some very interesting comments in it, which would be applicable to this, and it says that it's the policy of Congress that the national forests are established and should be administrated for outdoor recreation, range, timber, watershed, wildlife, and fish purposes. And it goes on to other language, and then it defines multi-use as being means the management of all the various renewable surface resources of the national forest so that they are utilized in the combination that will best meet the needs of the American people. And they're talking about the American people, they're not talking about the state of Oregon. Making the most judicious use of the land for some of all of the resources or related services over areas large enough to provide sufficient latitude for periodic adjustments and use to conform to changed needs and conditions. That some land will be used for less than all the resources and the harmonious and coordinated management of the various resources, each with the other, without impairment of the productivity of the land. With consideration be given to the relative values of the various resources, and this would be the part that most directly impacts House Joint Resolution 41, not necessarily the combination of the uses that will give the greatest dollar return or the greatest unit output. The National Environment Policy Act requires that we attain the widest range of beneficial uses of the environment without degradation, risk to health or safety, or other undesirable unintended consequences. And that is basically what is stated in the Act directly under paragraph B, section 101, paragraph B, subparagraph 3. We go on down in the Environmental Quality Improvement Act, says that all agencies must comply with DEQ regulations. The Forest and Rangeland Renewable Resources Act says that we require review and update of the renewable resource. And that's what this joint resolution directly speaks to, because we're talking about the plans that are being developed at this point. It further states that programs must be based on comprehensive assessment of uses, demand, supply, through analysis of environmental and economic impacts, coordination of multi-use and sustained yield opportunities are provided by Sustained Yield Act. So when we, as the state of Oregon, set up our goals and objectives, they must be, according to this federal statute, subordinate to the federal goals and objectives as developed under the Resource Planning Act. This is the act that requires the planning process. And the question I would ask is, can the state stop or supersede federal law and federal lands? There's more, and then the National Forest Management Act says the timber harvest only where other resources are protected. And it talks about sustained yield and departure. The departure would be where the governor, in his plans and recommendations, decides that he feels that they should take off from the land, particularly in a commodity such as timber, more than what that land will produce on a sustained yield basis. But there are some constraints on this. You can only do this in 20-year cycles, and you have to justify it. And the National Forest Management Act says that it is a policy of Congress that all forested lands in the national forest system should be maintained in appropriate forest cover with species of trees, degree of stocking, rate of growth, condition of stand design to secure the maximum benefits of multi-use sustained yield management according to land management plans. And it says all national forest land treated from year to year shall be examined after the first and third growing season, certified by the secretary in the report provided for under this section as to stocking rate, growth rate in relation to potential and other pertinent measures. And then if we go over into a further section, it states it assures that timber will be harvested from the national forest system land only where, and then it lists soil, slope, or the watershed conditions will not be irreversibly damaged. There's an assurance that such lands can be adequately restocked within 5 years after harvest.
Mr. Nell, could I interrupt you for a minute? Yeah. I've been listening to your testimony, and I've been trying to understand. I think you're presenting us with some very interesting facts about the current federal laws relating to land management, and that's, I'm not saying that's not important, but what I'm trying to understand is the relationship between the statutory citations you're making and this resolution, because I think what we're here to talk about today is HJR 41, not the overall question of federal forest planning.
Okay.
So I'd ask you to try to help me understand how those relate.
Specifically on lines 21, 22, and 23, the governor of the state of Oregon is directed to participate actively, and I would suggest that be added in there by use of information from state agencies, which is self-evident in a sense, but this would be, or agencies that have a responsibility in the planning. Because the idea there is that the Department of Environmental Quality, which would have an input and so forth, would be involved.
Well, there's nothing in the language, there's nothing in the language that excludes any agency from participating.
That's true.
Okay.
I'm just making a recommendation that it be made clear that they all are to be involved.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then if we go down to line 22, that the federal plans are consistent, to show that federal plans are consistent. And basically, here we have a conflict, and this is what I was getting to show that if our plans are not necessarily in agreement with the federal, then we have a problem. And I don't know how that's resolved underneath the resolution. And then if we go down to the state and local plans to meet the future needs, here again we have the federal land manager must manage on a sustained yield basis as defined in the statutes. And it's very, very clear in the statutes what he can and can't do. And if in the wisdom of the state of Oregon we want a departure from what they have defined, then we would have to go through the departure process with the federal government. If we go down now to line 31, and we talk about statewide cumulative impact, as I've pointed out from the federal law, they don't talk about statewide, they talk about the land involved, the forest involved. In other words, in my part of the state, the Umatilla Forest or the Law of Whitman or whatever, Mount Hill or whatever. And then if we go down to line 4 on the second page, it says no constraints shall be applied in the interim to existing plans in contemplation of the new plans, and urge that new plans shall consider the full range of possible management alternatives in order to make participation in the process by this state meaningful. Well, that's a double-edged situation because according to federal law, they have to do that. That's already done.
Let me make sure I understand that. According to federal law, they have to impose...
They have to look at all the aspects and all the constraints. And
my understanding of this language is that it asks that the federal government not apply constraints in contemplation of a new plan. Until the new plan is adopted. Now, that's my understanding of what this language says. Now, maybe you can, how do you feel about that? I mean,
well,
should they, I mean, I don't know, I'm kind of trying to find out here.
I understand, yeah.
Should the federal government be able to impose interim steps contemplating the adoption of a new plan before the new plan is adopted?
Well, if we go in back into the federal statutes, the one particularly that we have to renew every 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm.
They have to go through it every 2 to 3 years.
That's right. It says they have to review it every 2 to 3 years. And if they find, for instance, on the Sisalu Forest in an article that came out, they're 30% less inventory of a certain type of timber they thought they had.
Uh-huh.
They have no choice under the federal law. They've got to make an adjustment. Or if we have,
but I'm not sure that that's what this language addresses.
Right. That's the way I understood it.
Okay, now I'm going to read it again. I mean, let's read it together here, okay? Let's see what it says. Because what it says is that no constraint should be applied in the interim to existing plans in contemplation of the new plan.
Right.
Okay, now, federal law may require them to go through every 3 years with their existing plan and make adjustments. You tell me that's true, and I don't doubt you a bit. I think the concern, as I've had it expressed to me, is that the Forest Service might impose new restrictions, not based on new information in their old plan, but based on what they are assuming the new plan will be.
Well,
now, I don't know whether that's what's going on or not, but I'm told that that's been happening.
Well, that's happening, for instance, if we have a wilderness area designated during a plan period, and that wilderness area comes out of allowable cut, because at one time they had put their allowable cut based upon that many acres of producing timber. They have no choice but to reduce the allowable cut on what they have left. if they're to meet the other parts of the statute.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what's at issue here.
Right.
I really don't think that's what's at issue here. I think what's at issue here is another. Okay, let me cite to you, and I am not an expert on this, okay? But the example that's been cited to me is on the Mount Hood National Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, they have reduced the cut on the Mount Hood National Forest in contemplation of the new plan. Now, maybe there are other reasons that they did it. But what this resolution speaks to is that the Forest Service shouldn't make interim decisions based on a plan that they haven't yet adopted yet.
Well,
they have other legal responsibilities to adjust their plans. I mean, plans are dynamic. That there's a responsibility to adjust their plans. Like you're saying, if they find out that they only have 60% of the species that they thought they had, they got to make an adjustment. Okay. That's not, I don't think, an issue here.
Andy. If I might, perhaps I can clarify, and I'll address this more in my testimony. I'm Andy Kerr of the Oregon Natural Resources Council. The Forest Service has the ability to take their existing plans and, based on new information, modify them. But the entire inertia of the bureaucracy since the passage of the National Forest Management Act in 1976 has been to produce these new plans. The agency has decided that it wants to make changes, but it wants to make changes in this new